Sunday night or L'chosei Ador. I was all over Shara Bechina. Okay, I really want to finish Perek Dalet. but I get clarity, really. I use you ladies. I use you for my own benefit. So he's going to quote a pasuk at the very end of Perek Dalet that there are seven pillars of wisdom in the world, and he's going to suggest that the seven pillars are the seven areas that he says in which one sees Hashem. Number one, he doesn't describe it as physics and chemistry, because I don't even know if there was such a thing in the days of the Chayyim Salvavus, but he describes it as the way the world, the physical existence of the world. And again, we're talking Shara HaBechina, we're talking about seeing wisdom, purpose, design, chesed, orderliness, and how things work in tandem. We have that in an earlier perek. Like different things work in tandem. Like how does the bee know about the pollen, and how does the wind know about this? And so things work in tandem, and we see purpose, design, chesed, chokhmah. Okay. So there's what we call physics and chemistry, the laws of the physical existence of the world and of the universe, really. Gravity, I mean, all the things, yeah. Number two, not so clear. Mankind. Number three is already man as an animal. Meaning, in number three is the biology of man, and biology and all his evorim, or har evorim, of mankind, how the body works, speech, the brain, everything. It's utterly amazing. I have this DVD at home, The Miraculous Workings of the Human Body. This is number three. Rav Pesach Kron put out this DVD with a doctor and with all sorts of things here. With Avram Katz. Avram Katz of England is the one that wrote those books under pseudonames. Designer World, Wondrous World, Amazing World. He wrote a series of three books that I showed you. So the true name of the authors are Avram Katz. So he goes through the body with him, and body language, the Human Body Learning Center from over 30 medical professionals and specialists, again an appreciation for the amazing nature of the human body from a Torah perspective. So I once saw that, I bought it. So that's number three. Number two apparently is man as a mini-god, meaning a person has bechira. Hashem gave a man the world to develop it, to civilize it, to tame it. What does it say in Bereishis? Puru revu umiluas aretz v'chifshuha. Capture the world. Man builds, creates, tames, civilizes. Man is like the most, is an amazing creature. There's nothing like mankind in the entire universe. So that's an area of Bechina in itself. Man the creator, man the tamer, the civilizer, the creative process, the whole idea that people change the world, the generations, and one generation bequeaths to another its knowledge, and even going to war, and just everything that man does. That's not the same as number three. It's not so clear. The Chavetz Chaim does not specify exactly what he means. Number three is biology. Number four is the animal kingdom. Number five is plant life. Number six is the skills of mankind, crafts. Like as we think, Shara HaBechina, we usually think of nature, of things that man does not control. So in number six, he wants to wake us up to the idea that all the things that man does, it's not man, it's Hashem. And Hashem gave a shefa of chokhmah in this century, I say it, to become industrial, to go away from animals. And Hashem gave man the wisdom to make sidewalks and to make governing bodies and to make a police department and a fire department and to invent the telephone when he invented it. And if you read the stories of inventions, really, I think most of them happened by accident. Like they stumbled upon something. They were experimenting with something. And they noticed that when they did this, so it became rubber, like it became a hard material, and that was the discovery of rubber. You know, and you have all these things that And included in that is history. So someone said, is there a history book? So there's Jacob, this is the fellow that's the editor of Zman. You know, so this was the magazine Zman. So he wrote this book, The Hidden Hand, Uncovering Divine Providence in the 20th Century. And he writes a few things. He barely touches, you know, it's a drop in the bucket. But this is, you asked me, so this book exists. He has another book about the Holocaust along the same lines, Seeing the Yad Hashem in the Holocaust. If you want to piss it around with that. Now, unfortunately, I'm sad to say that, in fact, here I printed, someone said, isn't there a book that says it, that details this? I really looked a lot. Like, for example, Rabbi Wein's books. He makes almost a conscious effort not to make it religious, not to talk about Hashem. You know, it's a history book, and he doesn't want to turn it into a religious treatise. I found this. I typed into Google Hashem, or God's hand in history. And unfortunately, it was all Christian. It was all Christian. It was all Christian. So I didn't even see this book there, you know, because it's only the words. I came up with this, which someone wrote a paper. I think this person is rather a famous person. Doesn't have the name here. About how the Holocaust was a miracle. Meaning, he says, the strangeness of the Holocaust cannot be overstated. And he goes through a whole bunch of things that really would make the Holocaust incomprehensible. Like, how could such a thing have happened? And he says, because the Torah said it would happen. That's all the Torah said. So he's not going into now if they were punished, if they weren't punished. It's not no gaya. Well, it really is, I guess, because if you say the terrorist said it would happen, then it's obviously a punishment. And nowadays, but it was. It obviously was. And he says it was a miracle. I mean, according to Merriam-Webster Dictionary, a miracle means an extraordinary event manifesting divine intervention in human affairs. So he says, he goes through all the reasons why the Holocaust should not have happened. It was just against rationale, against, like, the modern world. they built a machine that did what the savages in Africa don't do. And they did it to people who were intermarried and were really part of German culture. And he goes through a whole bunch of things. And so I found that when I Googled the God's hand in history. But that was it. The closest thing I found is a series of books by a guy, I think a guy, probably, Max Diamond, D-I-M-O-N-T. He wrote, one book is called Jews, God, and History. Another one is called The Indestructible Jews. And the third book is called The Amazing Adventures of the Jewish People. The problem is, and this is like amazing, you know, we're learning Shar HaBechina. He is an atheist. He writes in the book as if we invented, Chas V'Shalom, the idea of a God. So I can't recommend the book because it's probably also to read. But if you don't listen, but if you read it, if you could skip that part. No, he shows how it's against all. This is the only book I found that goes through the whole history of the Jewish people and shows how the odds were always stacked against us and the strange things that happened to make us survive this gullus and that gullus and this oppression and this persecution. And he really does that in these series of books. Just like as we learn Shaar HaBechina, we will become more and more amazed at the fact that a scientist could be an apikoros, and we'll see that the scientists who are apikoros, for the most part, it's like a religion. It's a religion to be atheistic, because you have to be a true believer. Because Shaar HaBechina, that means, you see these things, you see a flower, you see an apple, you see a seed. There's more information in the seed's DNA than like in the biggest computer. So that's not even the Chovetz Halavos, that's what we know nowadays. The Chovetz Halavos just points out tens and maybe hundreds of other things which were 1,000 years ago, really. So it's amazing. This person wrote a series of 3 books. This is the closest thing I found to what someone asked, is there a book that shows, but he I don't know if I
mean, how do you know he's not Jewish?
I don't know.
Oh.
I don't know. But he's not Picarius. He's an atheist.
American, British?
It's an old book. I remember reading it. How did I remember? I remember reading it when I was a kid.
Oh.
Now they put out a second revised edition, Jews, God, and History. There's a guy also, Paul Johnson, that wrote History of Jews. But he doesn't have this nakuda of showing how the weirdest things happened in order to allow the Jewish people to survive. You know, the Aruch HaShulchan says, and I think there's a famous statement by a goy that says it also, that echoes the Aruch HaShulchan, that's the greatest testimony that Hashem's existence is the fact that the Jewish people are still around to tell the tale.
Wasn't that Mark Twain?
Yeah. Someone said that. Yeah. Somebody said it to the English Prime Minister. But the Aruch HaShulchan says it. He says there's no greater raya to Hashem, if you're talking about rayas, than the Jewish people. Anyway, the closest, so I found that book by this Jacob Astor book, which is Tipa Shebiyam, and this book really does it. It's just, I don't know if it's mutter to read, quite frankly, because there's a section when he gets up to Avram Avinu, he makes as if Avram invented this idea. And then he says, wow, look what happened. This is not a bad book. Ken Spira's book, Tanaish.com book. Tanaish.com book. This is not bad. A Crash Course in Jewish History is full. But it doesn't really have the Shaar HaBechina aspect. You really have to supply it yourself. But it's pretty good. It takes you on the roller coaster ride. It's not a fat, it's not so fat. And it really, if you want to have a shtickle. But really, we're going off a little from the Chovetz Halavos, because the Chovetz Halavos is really talking about human history also. He's talking about inventions, like the idea of, like I said, of the Industrial Revolution and the idea of electricity, and like things that changed the world, and they appeared at a certain, and to realize that Hashem had a cheshbon why at this point in time, this number 6 is to make us realize to use Shaar HaBechina for what we think of as human inventions. That's the chiddush of number 6. That people's skills, even what we read in the Chumash, Hu Hayavi Kol Tofes Kinor V'Yugav, right? The father of all musical instruments, and the one that started the idea of shepherding animals in the pasture. Right? Who are you? Avi kol Yoshev Ohelu Mikneh Tofes Kinor V'Ugav. In the beginning of Bresh, at the end of Bresh, it was for the histapchut of mankind and of the world. So Hashem introduced certain ideas. I think I mentioned Einstein's view of the universe. I once wrote a lot, in my younger years, I was more ambitious. You ever heard of Ephraim Soloveitchik, I'm sure. And he revolutionized learning, revolutionized. It changed the whole analytical approach to Gemara. And it's really very similar to Einstein's approach to physics and the different things that you have to make assumptions about and the way it opens up a new view of the universe. And there's no question in my mind that the same Shefa was brought to the world at about the same time. They lived about the same time. And one was in Torah and one was in this. And you have the same thing happened with Freud and Rabbi Sol Salanter, really, which is also the same thing. It's the same Shefa of all of a sudden making us realize how complex the human psyche is and how complicated it is. And that's what Yisrael Salanta said, hey, if we don't make a special limit of Musar, we are really buffeted by forces that we ourselves don't understand. And you feel jealous, and you feel angry, and you feel resentful, and you don't even know. You're being governed by your midos. Like, you think it's your seichel. You think you're in charge, and you're in seichel, and you have a right to be angry, and you have a right to be resentful, and you think you're being very rational, and how could it be an avera? Like, you know, it's a very rational thought process that this person is a bad person. And really, you're jealous of him. And really, you want to get back at your parents. And you Rabbi Sol Salanter talks about these things. And Or Yisrael is a really a revolutionary earth. It opened up a whole new world. And he said, and therefore, it's no longer enough to just learn Torah. And this is what World War II really, this was as major a split in Klal Yisrael as Hasidus was, the Mussar movement. Now it's like nobody cares anymore. Like, we're just hanging in there. I think that's what the Holocaust did. I mean, there's different social theories about why, like, everything just died down. So the Chafetz Chaim said, you know, the famous marshal of the Chafetz Chaim, like, a guy takes a son-in-law, so the son-in-law says, I'm only going to eat meat. I only want to eat meat. So he eats meat. And then he takes another son-in-law, he says, I only want to eat milchiks. It's okay, they eat milchiks. So they have to sit on different tables. They can't sit together and eat. Then the guy gets poor, he loses all his money. So he goes to his son-in-law. He says, you know, I have nothing for you anymore. You know, I just have bread. And, you know, I have a bread. So now you could sit at the same table already. So the Chafetz Chaim said that as a marshal, you know, when Hasidus was meat, let's say, and Misnagdus was milk, so they couldn't sit together at the same table. Now everything's gone, there's nothing. We're just hanging in there, it's from Jews. So it's like a Fleishik apat and a Milchik apat. You could already sit at the same table. It's okay, so that's why it's you know, the vitriol. So the Muslim movement, if you read it, when I was a kid, I read a Sefer Tnuas HaMusar, a very history book about the Muslim movement, written by a contemporary, I mean, Katz. He wrote a 5-volume work in Hebrew called Tnuas HaMusar. It was Leibedik. You know, we read about Ponovich now, we don't like to talk about it. You don't know what I'm talking about, but let's leave it that way. But then it was, yeah, there was fights. Bitter fights, because people felt that it was another Hasidus. It was like Hasidus. It was trying to now we don't, like, if I say the sentence now, it doesn't even make sense. It's trying to supplant Torah as the main thing with Mussar. It doesn't even make sense. And really, the Mussar movement lost and won at the same time. What yeshiva doesn't learn Mussar now? What person doesn't have a special, I mean, you're supposed to have a special limud of Mussar, which is what the Mussar movement wanted to accomplish. Rav Chaim Volozhin was still insisting with his Talmidim that if you learn Torah, that's going to be enough. Torah has everything in it. It has Mussar. It wasn't anti-Mussar per se. It was saying, you know, to put Mussar on a... But really, if you look at Or Yisrael, which was Rabbi Sol Salanter's Kochve, you buy the Sefer Or Yisrael, or his Rebbe, Rabbi Zal Petterberg, right, his Rebbe, and you read their Sfarim, it's like, it's Freud. It talks about the human mind and the subconscious and how a person is not even aware of what motivates him. And it's midos. See, his point is you can't conquer midos roles with seichel, or at least anymore you can't. See, that was the fight. You can't do it anymore. It doesn't do the trick because the midos win out. The emotions wins out. Your subconscious wins out, and you don't even know. So and you're not aware of it. So you have to learn Mussar, and Mussar fights fire with fire. Mussar appeals to the emotions. It tells you to imagine Gehenna. Of course, see the Michtam Eliyahu. Michtam Eliyahu maybe is, you know, he it's not Mussar. It's not really Mussar. See, the Michtam Eliyahu made it palatable to all the yeshivas because they can learn a Gemara and a Tosfos and a Rashba. So the Mechtam Elio is just as meaty and just as lumdus and just as deep, and you have to think. But you know, I wouldn't call that, that's not Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's Mutzer, Mechtam Elio. It's very, very intellectual. It's almost like studying Freud, you know, in college, but not sitting on the couch and like going through the process of accessing your childhood and accessing all the things that happened to you that shaped who you are and your personality, right? And you're just learning about Freud. So like Mechtam Elio, you're learning about all these forces of the soul and of the mind, and how a person could be so good yet bad, or so bad and yet good, and then a person, people are motivated and they don't chap how to motivate, but it's more of an intellectual process. So Salanter, you know, wanted you to sit for at least a half hour and repeat a Maimer Chazal over and over and over again. There's a very, I read a book once called Navardik. You heard of Navardik, I guess. Navardik was a very Musadika place. So there's a book, it was written in Hebrew, modern Hebrew, by an Israeli, I mean, you know, like a, probably not from, you know, like a Shimon Peres generation type. And he wrote a book called Navardok. You could barely buy in the store, like a Steinmetzki. It's very powerful. You see the way they acted and the way they went into his bodedus, really, and the way they worked on self-improvement, and they tore themselves to pieces and tried to put themselves back together. I'm really getting off topic. So this is all...
But before the Musar movement...
What?
Before the Musar movement came along, weren't people still driven by subconscious... And
yeah, it was important. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter opened up that world. Uh-huh. That's my point is just... There's no question in my mind that, just like I hold this, like Einstein in physics and Rav Chaim in Torah, you have Freud in the human mind, and Rav Yisrael Salanter did it through the lens of Torah. What I'm pointing out is, to me, that's Shar HaBechina, because it was the same decade and the same Shefa of Chochmah that Hashem decided this is what the world needs at this point in time. The world needs computers. I don't know the world. I was talking about last week, I think, separation of church and state. It's not such a good thing, but it happened at a very crucial point in history, maybe. Sometimes I tell myself, when Reform Judaism became a movement, and they also want to be recognized as Judaism, so maybe Hashem said, okay, there has to be separation of church and state, because or else maybe these guys will be in charge. You certainly don't want them in charge, so we're better off just cutting that, even though it emasculates a kehillah. There's no kehillos, and we can't tax, and we have to pay tuition, because we were the ones that made up free universal schooling, paid by taxes, and it's free. No, you don't pay tuition. Now look what, you know, look what we're holding now. It's a mixed blessing. It's not even a, you know, we don't think of it as a blessing sometimes. It's not, but if you think about it with the scope, that's what you say. Shara Bechina says Hashem knows what he's doing. Hashem knows what he's doing, and there's a flow of history, and like I said, you know, when electricity, when it stopped, all the things. So even if you find a book about Hashgacha Pratis with the Jews, I realize that the Chavis Halvavos is saying much, much, much more than that. He's talking about even Goyish history, just the whole flow of craft. When did people realize, like, you know, when did people realize you could take a wheat kernel and end up with a loaf of bread? That's an amazing, like, Hashem had to send that chokhmah down. Maybe he already told the Marishon, I guess. I don't know. Somewhere, Bereishis is like, we read it in 1 week, but it's like 1,000 years. Bereishis and Noach is like, whoa, and then things slow down. So you say, what happened then? I don't know, but when did people figure out that the cotton plant, you could do something with it, you know? You can make clothing, spinning thread. I mean, we take it for granted, you know, and now we go into a store. Now Hashem, So again, the little taste I have is that there's more Hester upon him. The further we get from the Beis HaMikdash, so that's where we're cut off. We don't grow things. We don't see plants. We don't see food grow. So much of the world goes into a supermarket and buys food. And we have running water at your tap. So we're cut off from Hashem. There's more and more and more Hester upon him. It's more and more Kol Chivot Zim Yadi. It's more, like before the great Gilui of Mashiach, right, it's darkest before dawn. That's what the Gemara says by Ayelas HaShachar, that it's before the Geula, it gets very, very dark. And so there's no more Hester upon him than I think. If you think about agriculture and water, just two examples, and you have to go to a zoo to see an animal. Like it's a treat for the kids to go apple picking. Oh, wow, look, grows on a tree. Thousands of apples on one tree. Hundreds, maybe thousands, hundreds for sure. Okay, that's number six. And number seven. Okay, now we're going to number seven. Number seven is Torah. No, but not really, it's more than Torah. Number seven is, and again, Shar HaBechina means that he wants you to think about this. He's not going to, you see, in Perek Hey, he will elaborate on, but he doesn't elaborate on all seven things in Perek Hey. He says it's too much. He picks basically number two and three to talk about mankind and biology. He talks about that. Mostly number three. He mostly goes through the human body. A little astronomy, a little of number one, a little. And a little of the animal kingdom. But that's, I'm hoping we end up supplanting that. This young lady here still printed out. I have it. I'm walking around with it. The Anthropic principle. That's number one. And he barely touches upon that. But again, the Shar HaBechina, I'm going to say something now. He wants you to think about it. That this is the whole point of Shar HaBechina, to think. And number seven is, we'll learn it inside in a second. Number seven is how the Torah gave mankind a value system. And like even the Goyim who don't have Torah, but they set up their society based on the Torah's values. And you see how much the Torah, how universal the Torah is, how it's such an amazing document. And it's such an amazing, it's such an amazing thing that Hashem has bequeathed to the world. And now every society, like, you have zoning laws and safety laws, right? Which is a very modern invention, and child labor laws. Like, everything is from the Torah. Everything is based on, they call it Judeo-Christian ethics, right? But we know it's Judeo-ethics. It's not, the Arabs are chayas. The Arabs are chayas. What they would give to the world is a murder and hachnas asarachim, but slit his throat overnight.
Not while they're doing hypnosis or reading books out the house.
But that's number seven, is to appreciate what Torah is and how Hashem gave the world the Torah, and even Goyish societies have adapted the values and the ethics of Torah to set themselves up. And it's really the way the Rambam describes Christianity, which is not so well, we don't like to talk about that Rambam, but the Rambam describes Christianity as if you look at history and you say, Avodah Zorah became rampant in the world, and then Christianity is like, Christianity is a step in the right direction. That's the Rambam's point. Hello? No, you're speaking to him, but you can't speak to him. You'll have to call back after 11 p.m.
After 11.
Or tomorrow morning. Okay, bye.
Thanks.
Sorry, I usually... he calls it a step in the right direction. Just monotheism. And But he's talking about everything. The fact that look at Africa. Look at Bnei Cham. Savagery, uncivilized. It's civilized the world, and you get an honest day. Even being liberal and being tolerating your fellow man. These are all Torah ideals. Not what they call liberal now. So that's what he says. And then he says, nature, it's amazing. So that's Shar HaBechina, how the world really fell into lockstep with the Torah's basic values and the idea of a just society, and you don't cheat people, and people have to learn how to get along, and you want to protect. Like I say, zoning laws. It's in Bava Basra, the second parak. You want to protect people from the neighbors encroaching upon their whatever it is. So that's an amazing thing, that Torah, which was given to a very narrow slice of humanity, really, you see, it captured the whole world. I think that's the Kuzari's point too, that the major religions of the world, they all agree that the Torah is true, And then he says, nature, this we don't see so much. This is the Ramban at the end of Bo, that nature follows the Torah. And if we're good, so we get rain, and things are good. And if we're not good, they're not good. So Torah really is the foundation of the world, and everything falls into lockstep with the Torah. That's number 7. And if you have a discerning eye, you could see it. And that's Shar HaBechina. Vashvius, that's the end of Perek Dalet, number 7. Simen HaChochma HaNir, and also just the wisdom of the Torah. I'm not talking about the ritual laws. I'm talking about Choshe Mishpat. Right, labor laws when you hire workers and paying them, and the whole Chosha Mishpat and the whole Ebenezer, right, family life and everything, anything you can think of is in the Torah, and it's just full of Chachma, and it's the perfect society. Siman HaChachma Nir B'Kfiyas HaTorah V'Achukim Lavod Bem Abor Yusala. The idea that Hashem gave us an instruction manual how to serve Him. Lagia bohem hashoke dalehem lahanos olam azem biyad. You won't be stressed. This is the idea that, he means something as simple as if you don't get angry, you're going to live longer. You're going to not be stressed, and you'll be healthier. Society will be healthy if there's no drugs and no pornography, and there's family life. I was just reading today. Somebody wrote in a column that America is going downhill very, very fast. More than half the births are to single mothers. Is that possible? I think that's what it said. More than half the births are to single mothers. That's tragic. That's away from Torah. That's what he says, He says Torah gives you a stable society. A kid has parents, right? Things like saying, if you're not stressed, you'll be healthier. Society, if it's not steeped in drugs and pornography and arayas an honest farmers, they work on, they get an honest day's work, they put in the work, and they, if you want to see the degradation of society, Dennis Prager just wrote a column of within the last month, I don't know exactly when, what is happiness? He goes through, he gives 7 things that make people happy, and says that's why people are miserable nowadays. You're happy when you have something you earned, it wasn't given to you, when you do for others, when you don't have a sense of entitlement. He has 6 or 7 things that make a person happy, and like it says in Pirkei Avos, v'chilufeihen begoilim. If you look at this nowadays, you look at the Western world for sure, it's mamish the opposite. Everybody's rioting, everybody's feels entitled to welfare or food, whatever it is. sense of entitlement. And you complain, the 99%, the 1%, they resent rich people, high taxes. That's not the Torah way. The Torah way is to say you should give tzedakah, and you should have interest-free loans, and iser ona'ah, so things don't get out of hand. You know, taka, but it's not imposed by, it's imposed by the Torah's morality. It comes from morality, not from government rules, because everybody's immoral. So he says, you have hanos and olam hazeh. Even in the Torah, it talks about rain, and on a personal level, as I said, you're not stressed and you're calm and you have a good family life. And then amazingly Hashem gave us an instruction manual how to be zochet olam haba. That means an olam hazeh. That's an olam hazeh. Utluyim b'zeh en yoni ha-menhogim asher bohem seder anhoga she'or ha-umos v'to'alosam. As I told you before, really you see in larger goyish society that they pattern their ethics and their values and their judicial system, at least theoretically, on Torah value and ethics. V'im omdim lohem b'mokam toireh ben yoni ha-olam b'levad. They don't have olam haba. They're not doing it mitzvahs. They don't recognize Hashem. But they will have a decent society. You know, when there was prohibition and you couldn't just go get drunk whenever you wanted to, and there were anti-pornography laws and anti-drug laws, right? And marriage was marriage, so you had a normal society to some degree. Now it's all breaking down, these things that he's talking about. So you see how the crime rate rises and suicide rates rise and people are miserable and the society is sick society. But Chavos is saying the Goyim adopted Torah values, and that's why they can have very healthy or semi-healthy societies. Not Jewish necessarily, not Olam Haba, but at least in Olam Hazeh, they can have a normal society where there's a rule of law. The whole idea of the rule of law is a Jewish invention, is a Torah invention, I should say. Things used to be quite capricious. No rule of law. Law was who had the bigger gun or the bigger knife.
So how did it change again now?
What?
Why did it change again now?
That's a good question. So we're getting close to Mashiach and everything's breaking down. And I don't know. I'm not smart enough to know why. But you see it is. You see he's right that there's a correlation. That people are, you see, that the more they go away from the Torah values, the society is breaking down. They think they're going to create a better society if they have a more permissive society and a more open society and a more liberal society. Instead, and it certainly is related to the anti-Israel, anti-Semitic mood that's taken over the whole world, because we're still hanging in there, whether we know it or not, whether we like it or not, whether we are from or not, the Jew still will always represent Hashem. That's why Hitler hated the Jews. That's why Germans hated the Jews, and that's why the world now hates the Jews. As it moves away from Torah values, the Jew becomes just a thorn in its side. And that's why they want to delegitimize. And there's no question in my mind that that's Shar HaBechina, that's going on, that's part of the dynamic going on.
Is it a rejection of God then?
Yeah, for sure. For sure, there was never, you know, nobody's from anymore. The Pope's a joke. It's a joke. Nothing anymore. Protestantism was, in some ways, it was a move away from the more Avodah Zarah Dika aspects of Christianity. On one hand, it was a step in the right direction. But then he turned rapidly, Luther, what's his name? Turned rapidly anti-Jewish when they didn't want to come on board. And then the Mele people became, the Goyim became less, pardon the expression, from Kfar Nemar. When I was 10, I think Catholics couldn't eat fish on Fridays. or something like that. They couldn't eat meat on Friday. Something they couldn't eat Friday. They didn't eat meat. I remember seeing a calendar. You went to the calendars had a picture of a fish every Friday. Every Friday there was a picture of a fish on the calendar. Because they didn't eat meat. They had to eat fish. Gefilte fish, probably. But then they were mevatel it.
It was one of their rules.
They were one of their rules. Now there are no more rules. The reason that they don't care about the, you know, they make a whole tumult with contraceptives, and there's nobody cares. Catholics, the church, it's a joke. The whole Christianity really came to say that there shouldn't be rules, really. There shouldn't be Torah. I mean, that's, you know, to reject the idea that Hashem cares about it, like the pratim of how you live your life. Okay, that's another schmooze. Why it's breaking apart nowadays, I don't know. I don't know why. I don't know. It's part of the preparation for Mashiach, you know. Before Mashiach comes, everything breaks down. Everything just goes to pieces. And ein lanu lishon el avinu shvashamayim. So you don't have any more, even the chitzonius of Torah values. The whole world has gone to pot. And there's missiles flying. You know, not going to take too long to reach Beit Shemesh. You know? We're not that far from Ashkelon and Ashdod. And I'm sorry to laugh. You know, it's like it's only a question of time. Things are going to look bleak and without any hope. And the world, the America. I mean, what was unthinkable? I don't want to say in a mixed company. What was unthinkable 2 years ago. Now in every state in America is passing a law that a man can marry a man. So that's unheard of. 2 years ago it was unthinkable. It was like 3 years ago. It was like the most degenerate, disgusting to'eva. And that now every New York State, they don't like to talk about it. New Jersey would have passed it. Christie vetoed it. But New York passed it. And they're so proud of it. And they're so happy. Like the most degenerate. Hashem Yirachem. We need Mashiach. That's it. That's what we need, Mashiach. Can't get along without him. Okay, I have to stop, I'm afraid. I have to be at the shul.